Before we get started, I have a request. On Friday, I was out in the heat a bit too long, got severely dehydrated and suffered from heat exhaustion. So my thinking today is a little scrambled. I was hoping not to have to say that, but Katrina told me I made several mistakes in the class. If that happens during the sermon, let me know so that I don't put this recording online. I think you all know what I mean to say when I say something. But I feel fine other than, you know, when your electrolytes aren't good, your brain doesn't fire in just the right way. And I've been hydrating like you wouldn't believe, but it was really severe, so I haven't quite gotten there yet. So I'm standing up here, and my mind is telling me all the right stuff. And what's coming out my mouth isn't quite what I meant to say. So if that happens, let me know. I have an easy lesson to preach, so hopefully I'll be okay. I think I could fall asleep and preach this one, so hopefully I'll be okay through this. So what we're going to talk about today is evangelistic oversight not being the answer to an absence of an eldership. And the reason I'm preaching this is obvious, and it's multi-place. Let me say now, while I have this thought gathered properly, sometimes when there's no eldership, brethren will look to the evangelist, and that has happened here at times, as though an evangelist has some more authority or way to deal with it. My job, my work as an evangelist, would be different if we had elders, in that I would be in submission to some degree to those elders. But as a whole, wouldn't change very much at all. But my authority doesn't increase because we don't have elders. I don't have the right, scripturally, to say or do things. And we'll talk a little bit about what that means as we go through this lesson. We talked about the qualifications of elders back in January of 2019, all the way through July of 2019. We had a sermon series on the qualifications of elders taken from 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and Titus 1, 5 through 9. And you already knew going into that study how hard it is to find qualified men to be elders. And coming out of that study, you probably had even a greater appreciation for how difficult it is for a man to be a qualified elder. Well, what happens very often in churches of Christ that I and others have seen is where there are no elders, and sometimes even when there are elders, evangelists end up ruling the congregation. That's an important word. We're going to talk about it biblically later. It's an important word. And you know, if you've been around, that there are times where I'll step up in the role of evangelist, but there's a lot of times where I won't do or say anything about certain things. That's because I don't have the right to. And it's not that I don't have a thought about it. It's I have no right to say anything or do anything in a particular case. We'll talk about some cases as we go through this lesson. I want to start in 2 Timothy chapter 4. I want to talk about the authority that I... So if I'm speaking of I'm talking evangelist in general. But I might put it as I throughout the lesson. Faithful evangelists have some authority within the work of a congregation that's expected to be handled aright. In 2 Timothy 4, beginning verse 1, Paul says to Timothy, as Paul's about to die, he says, "I charge thee before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at His appearing in His kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. They shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned into fables. But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry." So when you look at that, I have the authority, or an evangelist has the authority to preach, has to be ready to do so at all the time, to reprove, rebuke, and exhort. but has to be done with long-suffering. And doctrine means teaching, and a way of teaching. The effort to prevent false doctrine, watch thou all things. The work of an evangelist separates. That means I have something different that I do than what everyone else does. When we think about these roles, I want you to look at Titus chapter 2 as well. In verse 1, Paul tells Titus, an evangelist, and I think we all know this. If you want to understand the work of an evangelist, read 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. And of course, there's examples throughout the epistles, including the book of Acts. But the direct instructions. Titus 2:1 says, speak those things which become sound doctrine, which means befits sound doctrine. In verse 15, after he goes through talking about how the aged men are to be, the women, the pattern of good works, to how Jesus gave Himself to purify us, make us a peculiar people, zealous of good works, he says, verse 15, these things speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no man despise thee. That is an important passage. And it means there's a time where an evangelist is going to have to stand in the gap, step in the way, and let nobody move him out of that position. It requires a certain quality to be able to do that. In recent years, you've only seen me do that once, and that was with George. When George wanted to come back a second week, and I said, nope, enough, we're done, this is over. That's what that looks like. I did it via email and then in person that next Sunday. Well, the word despise means not to think beyond, not to depreciate, not to condemn, not to exalt oneself above. So there's a time where a man as an evangelist has to speak with all authority, and he needs to take that role, even if there's elders. You know, if elders are wrong, an evangelist has a job to step up and deal with that. You know, when we're reading in 1 Timothy 5, not to do it before, unless there's two or three witnesses, etc. But an evangelist has that job to do. It can't be ignored. He can't step back and say, I'm not going to do this. It's probably one of the least favorite things that a man trying to teach would want to have to do, because, you know, then you look like an ogre. But I was in that position. For those of you who have been here, I think I've been here 15 years. 15 years. For those of you that were here 15 years ago, you saw me do that for about two straight years. Where a lot of people, I think most people just probably didn't like me very much at all. Well, that had to be the case. That's how things had to be handled at that particular time. You want to get past that as an evangelist. You don't want to have to do that all of the time. But that's the instruction. There's limitations to the work of an evangelist in this regard. For example, look at 1 Corinthians 3, something we're all familiar with. An evangelist is limited in ways, first by the spirituality of the membership of the congregation. In 1 Corinthians 3, Paul as an apostle was even limited. He said, I, brethren, verses 1 through 3, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as the babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with meat, for hitherto you are not able to bear it, neither are you now able. For ye are yet carnal, for as there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal and walk as men? The carnality of the congregation, the lack of spirituality can prevent it. The lack of spiritual growth, a context we're familiar with in Hebrews chapter 5, where the Hebrew writer wants to talk to them, really going back to chapter 4, about Christ. And he says in verse 11, We have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing you're dull of hearing. Well, what made them dull of hearing? For when the time you ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that uses milk is unskillful in the word righteous, for he's a babe. Strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. So a man teaching in the role of evangelist, he has to understand the spiritual level of the congregation and the knowledge. And in this lesson, I'm talking about the work of an evangelist within a congregation. As you all know, me as an evangelist, I have work outside the congregation. And in fact, I will tell you that probably more than half of that work that I do is outside of the congregation, trying to save the lost, trying to help people in other areas of the world, etc. So this lesson I'm intending, I would think that that would be clear because we're talking about the eldership. I'm intending it to be within the framework of the local congregation. I probably should have said that earlier on. Another limitation, and you see this even with Jesus, if you go back to Mark chapter 4, a limitation anybody in a teaching role has, Mark 4, 33 and 34, is the readiness of somebody to hear something. Mark 4, 33 and 34, he answered and said, "Who is my mother or my brethren?" No, that's Mark 3. Mark 4, 33 and 34. "With many such parables spake he the word to them as they were able to hear it. But without a parable spake he not unto them. And when they were alone, he expounded all things to his disciples as they were able to hear it." And of course, we know what Jesus and the apostles, especially when we read John 16, 1 through 13, Jesus wasn't, even Jesus, the greatest teacher ever to walk the face of this earth, in 3 years wasn't able to teach everything that the disciples needed to hear, had to send the Holy Ghost to teach them later. So if you look at these 3 points, and I'm not saying they're the only 3 points, but the spirituality, the knowledge level, and whether or not people are ready to hear things, that limits the work of an evangelist within the framework of a congregation. And by the way, that's where an eldership would be great to have. Because as an evangelist, I could go to those elders and I could say, "Hey, I've been wanting to teach on this, this, and this. Can you help to direct the congregation to be ready to get to that discussion? Be ready to get on to those types of things." That's where the elders may be spending private time in certain members' homes. You know, as an evangelist, you could be accused of, and rightfully so, if you're just going about meeting with certain members, what are you trying to do? That's suspicious. Elders, that's their role. They're shepherds. They're going to be out shepherding the flock. They're going to be in among people, helping them get to where they need to be. When we were reading in 2 Timothy 4 about the authority of the evangelist to watch, that is part of my job, but listen, that's also the work of elders and of every member of the congregation. If you look at the book of Jude, and there's different things to watch for, right? We're watching for the second coming of Christ, watching the world, watching everything else. But in the book of Jude, verses 3 and 4, Jude says, "Beloved, when I gave all diligence to writing you the common salvation, it was needful me to write unto you and exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. For there are certain men crept in unawares, who were before of old ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of our God into lasciviousness and denying the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ." This is the role of all of us. So the work of watch, that's not unique to an evangelist. We're all watchmen, watch women. We all have to be alert. And there's going to be times where members of a congregation may be the best watchmen, even over evangelists and elders. You might say, "Well, when would that be the case?" Well, think about the number one priority of an evangelist is to teach with all long-suffering and doctrine to get people to heaven, right? So could there be times where an evangelist might be too long-suffering? Could there be? So whose job is that then? That's the membership's job to step up and say, "Hey, this person's not changing." When we look at the word long-suffering, right? And you think about God when we studied the book of Hosea today, how long-suffering a God was. So sometimes members of the congregation have to protect the elders and the evangelists too, and have to say, "You're trying too hard, brother. I know you're trying to get them to be saved, but you're trying too hard. It's time to give up. It's time to let them go." And remind that eldership or that evangelist that there's a time to shake the dust from your feet and move on, even as Jesus taught Matthew 10 to the disciples. Sometimes members have to take that role. So don't sit back and say, "Well, Brian knows about false doctrine and he knows about error and he's aware of a lot of stuff that's going on and he'll see it if he comes in." But what if Brian becomes blinded by the desire to save a soul? What will you do? Will you step up? And you might say, "That could never happen." Well, sure it could. Sure it could. You got to remember, my number one goal in my life, the most important thing to me, is to get people to heaven. So if you tell me, go to hell and grab that person and drag them out, I'll try. Even if I might get stuck there. That's just an illustration. But even if I get stuck there, I'd let them step on, because that is my number one goal. That makes me different in my role than other people. That gives it that. Shepherds, elders, they have to watch for souls because they'll give an account. Hebrews 13, 7 and 17. And we're going to look at that a little bit later. So think about how that might cause them to have some different perspective that members could even help them with. So never downplay your role to watch. And even though you read it in the framework of elders and evangelists. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, evangelists have authority to prevent error from being taught. In 1 Timothy 1, beginning verse 3, Paul tells Timothy, "As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went in Macedonia, that thou mightest charge them that they teach no other doctrine, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies which minister questions, rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do. Now the end of the commandment is charity out of a pure heart and of a good conscience, of faith unfeigned, from which some have swerved, have turned aside unto vain jangling, desiring to be teachers of law, understanding neither where they say, neither what they say, nor whereof they affirm." And one more, and then I'll make the point over in Titus 1, 10 through 14, after the qualifications of elders, says, "For there are certain men, for there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. One of themselves, even a prophet of their own, said, the Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, slow bellies. This witness is true. Wherefore rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth." So if you look at 1 Timothy 1, 3 through 7 and Titus 1, 10 through 14, an evangelist has to be aware of false doctrine and has to be capable of stopping it. And you think of that language of stopping their mouths. And there's some wisdom in how that can be done in different cases, because an evangelist never wants to come across, I'll say myself, I never want to come across as somebody who's trying to rule over the congregation. So there's ways to go about that might be done. But if it ultimately comes down to it, man just has to stop it. Has to say, this is going no further. Why? The goal is to save souls. What's false doctrine going to do? Or potentially do? Might cause somebody to be lost. Might step in there. In Titus 1, since you're still there, Paul told Titus, "For this cause I left thee in Crete, that thou shouldest set in order the things that are wanting, and ordain elders in every city, as I appointed thee." The authority to put things in order. The authority to appoint elders. That in a nutshell, is the work, and that's a nutshell. You know, we could greatly expand upon that. But that's the primary work of an evangelist within a congregation. It's not to shepherd. It's not my role to shepherd. We had members here a couple of years ago, and they would come to me, "Well, I think you should talk to so-and-so because I picked up on this or I picked up on that." And I would say, "That's not my job. That's not my job." "Well, are you just going to let them do it? What if they sin?" I said, "Do you see something you think you should address?" "Well, yeah, then you address it. But it's not my job. If I see somebody err, I'll address it. But I'm not going to do something based on what you're telling me. I'm not an elder." And in fact, this particular man, I think I made "I'm not an elder" comment to thousands of times while they were here for a short period of time, because he could just not comprehend that, why aren't you running this congregation and doing things in this particular way? Because there's not authority for an evangelist to do that. It's just not there. You can't create it. You can't invent it. You can't say, "Well, what do we do without elders?" We don't have elders. Nobody has the right to step into the shoes of an elder if they're not qualified to be one. And for the record, I will never be qualified to be an elder. I have an unfaithful child, and even before then, I wouldn't have because of Taylor. I'm not comfortable with the qualifications of having faithful children with even Taylor being the case. So I would have never, and all of the time I've been preaching, I had this mindset where I did not want to be an elder. At one point I said if it was absolutely necessary, maybe. But then when I considered Taylor, it was completely off the table. So I will never be qualified to shepherd a congregation in any way. I am only an evangelist. Now, I want to step back and give you kind of a couple of thoughts before I go on. Before I lose them, frankly. There are even things that I personally do that if you were to judge other evangelists, let's say I die because I go out and run in the heat and end up dehydrated and fulfill all of Katrina's fears. And you all find a faithful evangelist, good luck, but you do. You can't sit back and say, are you going to put together a weekly article? That stuff I choose to do, but that's not necessarily something an evangelist has to do. You're not going to be able to look at him and say, well, we're used to getting a handout for what we're studying on Sunday. Are you going to have... That's something that I choose to do. That's not something that an evangelist might do. Or trying to have people over in the backyard. Hopefully we could ever get to that. That's just something I choose to do. That's not something that an evangelist has to do. You can never judge one evangelist by another. You have to stick to 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus and use that as the rule book of what an evangelist does. There are things an evangelist that I could do as a member of a congregation, but I won't do because I do not personally think it's expedient. Do you hear that? That means it's my decision. It doesn't mean going forward it would be bound on anybody else. And it doesn't mean it applies to any other evangelist. I don't want anything to do with the treasury at any point in time, past, present, or future. So I don't want to count the contribution. I don't want to be part of keeping a checkbook. And I have abilities. I'm good at accounting. I'm very organized and handle finances pretty well. I have the skill set. I do not want to do it because, in my personal judgment, it could cast off the wrong kind of image. There are subjects I don't like to teach on. The next class we have, August, Brandon's going to do a... I almost said Brandon's going to do a cogitation. We'll just stop here. Brandon's going to do the discernment class, and he's going to we're all going to study, but he's going to be the man standing up here, and it's going to be one that deals with the treasury and financial support of evangelists. Those are subjects I don't like to teach on. I know I have the responsibility to teach the whole Word of God, Acts 20, 26, and 27. And therefore I do it, but you don't see me doing it very often, do you? Things that I don't like to address. It's my personal thing. Bound on nobody else. But I'm still going to make sure it gets taught. I'm going to make sure that another brother has the opportunity to teach some things. Make sure that the lessons that need to be taught get taught. And within the framework of an evangelist, that's part of my job. Doesn't mean I have to actually be the one teaching. But somebody who, when you look at false teachers, 2 Peter 2, 1 through 3, one of the signs of a false teacher is that they're covetous, that they view brethren as merchandise. So rather than even allowing that charge to be made, I just prefer not to be the one teaching it. We're going to be teaching out of the same book. I didn't write the book. I know it's going to be the same lesson. And Brandon will put that material together. Now, moving on. Evangelists are also members of the congregation, right? As an evangelist is supposed to practice what he preaches. 1 Timothy 4, 12 through 16. But he's also a member of a congregation. So that means whatever members of the congregation are expected to do, an evangelist, not in the role of the evangelist, but as a member of the congregation, also has to be able to do certain things. Like, when we open our Bibles and we go to Romans 12 and we look at different things to pertain to Christians, where Romans 12, 9 through 16, just for example, says, "Let love be without dissimulation," which means hypocrisy. "Abhor that which is evil, cleave that which is good, be kindly affectionate one another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing the necessity of the saints, giving the hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, bless and rejoice not, rejoice with them that do rejoice, weep with them that weep, be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not the high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits." Preachers, evangelists, whatever you want to call, they have to do all this too. I have to do all of this too, but not as an evangelist, as a member of a congregation, as a brother in a particular local congregation. To serve one another, Galatians 5 and verse 13. We're all instructed to do that, right? So an evangelist is not somehow all of a sudden, well, he's just an evangelist. He doesn't have to worry about anything else. The family. I have to love my wife, raise up my children, provide for my home, Ephesians 5, 22 through 6, 4, and 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. So I have all the things from that everyone else has to worry about. Putting shelter over the head, food on the table, clothes on the back, being able to be a good citizen in the kingdom of God. Whatever it is that Christian men are required to do, in addition to the work of an evangelist, I am required to do as well. So there are different judgments to be made on evangelists. And by the way, elders too. Elders would be required to be shepherds of the flock, but also act in the framework of members of the members of the congregation as well. And those are two different roles, two different types of things to do. So within that, you have to think, what's the parable of the talents teach all of us? You know, Matthew 25, 14 through 30. Are there things that you're capable of doing and I'm capable of doing? Maybe things you're capable of doing that I'm not, or vice versa? If I were capable of leading songs, then I should lead some songs. If I'm capable of fixing something around the place where we assemble, then I ought to fix things. You know, we all have that. La Rosa comes out here pretty much every Saturday. Right, La Rosa? And sprays and kills the weeds. And then when they grow up, I come out and mow them. Any one of us can do that. That has the physical ability and means to do it. That's not anybody's quote-unquote job. It supplies to the work of the congregation. Evangelists are supposed to practice what they preach. Otherwise, they're inexcusable. Romans 2, 1 through 3. So when you're looking at the work of an evangelist, that's what you look at. But to transition fully into our lesson, to give an evangelist authority that belongs to elders makes the whole congregation wrong. Makes the evangelist wrong too. And I'm going to tell you, in almost every congregation I've been aware of that did not have elders but had evangelists, the evangelist ends up in the denominational pastor system, or as a pope-like figure, or whatever the case may be. And it's a twofold problem. Number one, the congregation wants that to happen. People want to be led, so they want a leader. And they say, "Here, no, you do it. Oh, we trust you. Oh, we trust." It's not a matter of trust. It's a matter of he doesn't have the right. And then he ends up doing it because no one else does, and he thinks it needs to be done. I said it when we studied elders. I've said it over the years. I wrote articles years ago about the men's business meeting, how men who aren't qualified can't act like elders. And you'd have men come together and take some kind of a vote about what's supposed to happen in the direction of the congregation. There's no authority for that. None of those men are qualified to do those things. So as I've said all throughout the years, a congregation without elders is limited in what it can and cannot do. You cannot just say, "We're going to appoint somebody." In 1 Peter chapter 5, you had Peter, who was an evangelist, an apostle and an elder. So there's your authority for all of that. He says in 1 Peter 5, beginning verse 1, "The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that should be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind. Neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, you shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away." When you look at this text, and I want to give you a thought as I'm reading this that comes to my mind. Just want to make sure I gather it before I say it. Feed the flock, work of elders, spiritual work of elders. See the same things in Acts chapter 20, 28 through 31. Trey, just go shut that door. It's being pulled by the wind. But then when it says taking the oversight of, and thinking about what that means, a number of years ago we had a member of the congregation that allegedly was living with a woman. Some of you might remember this. He was allegedly living with a woman, and he was showing some behavior that was questionable, and several members were aware of it. And I was asked, "Why don't you go and check and see if there's a woman living there?" I said, "That's not my job. I'm not going to do it in this case, and I'm not going to do it in another." You know what an elder would do? An elder would go. The elders would go and they would check and see what the living conditions are of that particular member and deal with it accordingly. And it wouldn't become a congregational matter unless it reached the point of discipline. But that's not the role of an evangelist. My role is to teach. Once I go and start overseeing, shepherding the flock, I've stepped into shoes I'm not allowed to wear, that I'm not qualified to fit, way too big for me. And I've gone beyond what I'm allowed to do. So in cases like that, where if we had elders, they would be very much more involved in the lives of the members of the congregation. An evangelist is not. My job is to teach. I'm to be involved as much as I need to be able to be a teacher, but not beyond that. And as much as I need to be able to be a brother, but not beyond that. You've seen over the years where you might be in a congregation and they'll appoint certain committees or whatever they call them, groups, to look after the members in certain areas of town, right? That's the work of elders. That can't be appointed to a group of unqualified Christians, because unqualified Christians are not shepherds. Shepherds meet the criteria of what it means to look after the flock. I do not, right now, we do not have an eldership, so none of us do. So that's a lacking work in this congregation. It's going to prevent us from being able to do some things that may work out. When you look back at Ephesians chapter 4, the context of this chapter that I'm going to be taking from is talking about spiritual gifts that we're going to cease. But I do so to read verse 11. Where it talks about how the Lord went to heaven contextually and He gave some offices. He said, gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Pastors are the overseers. Notice that evangelist, unless he's somebody like Peter who meets the qualifications, doesn't fit two of those roles. That's a separate work. Just an evangelist, just in that way. And as an evangelist, being limited, if you look back at 1 Corinthians chapter 4, you know, and I think we all know this, apostles had authority. Acts 2, 42 through 46, they continued in the apostles' doctrine. What was the evangelist supposed to do? In 1 Corinthians 4, 17, "For this cause have I sent unto you Timotheus, who is my beloved son, faithful in the Lord, who shall bring you to remembrance of my ways which be in Christ, as I teach everywhere in every church." What was Timothy supposed to do? Teach what Paul taught. What's Brian supposed to do? Teach what Paul taught. Not just Paul, but Jesus, Peter, etc. Nothing more than that. I don't have authority. That's where preach the word. is the limitation. Preach the Word is where I have my authority. Remember when we talked about in times past the training of... In fact, we had a lesson on Anthropos not too long ago out of 2 Timothy 2, 1 through 4, where Timothy was to take other men. And he said the same in 2 Timothy 2, 2, the things thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, same thou commit to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. That's the limit. That's where I'm at. So, let me give you an example of how this limits me. I might see the need for the congregation to be stronger in knowledge or spirituality. I may and do. If you all would come together 7 days a week, I'm ready to teach. That'd be great. I would love it. 7 days a week, twice a day if you want it. I'm good. I'm ready for it. That's my preference. I know we'd grow if we could. I know it's not expedient, by the way. I may desire, you know, Paul taught night and day for the space of 3 years in Ephesus, Acts 20 and verse 31. I might read that and I might say, man, I wish that I could do it. But I can't implement that. I can't say, brethren, this congregation is going to start meeting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7 o'clock in the evening for Bible study. I'd love it, but I have no authority by which to do that. You know who would? Elders. Now, elders that are qualified wouldn't lord over the flock, right? They'd find means and times that everybody could fit. They wouldn't tell you, you know, you got to quit your job. Why? Well, you got to provide for your family. So they wouldn't tell you, but they would find times to where if they saw fit that there was need for more feeding of the flock, that we would assemble more. And they may look at me and they may say, hey, we're going to meet 5 times a week. We want you to teach 4 times. And then we're going to hold one of those classes as the elders of the congregation. And within the framework of their authority, that would be exactly what would happen. And they would be able to proceed in that direction. Well, they would do it in the right way. Don't sit back and say, well, that makes me dread an eldership. They wouldn't just get up and make an announcement. They'd talk to every member of the congregation, see if they could find times and days where everybody could assemble. That's called shepherding. It's not teaching. That's shepherding. As an evangelist, I'm limited to this. I can tell you we must be here on the first day of the week, Acts 27 through 11. I can't tell you unless the whole... And I'm going to get into this point in a moment. I'll prove this to you in a moment. So let me just say this. Unless the whole congregation decided we're going to meet certain days, I have no authority to tell you to be here anytime outside of the first day of the week where the Bible instructs by way of example and inference that you must be. That's where I'm limited. Now, the elders, they have this word called rule. If you look at 1 Timothy 5, verse 17, Paul is talking about the context is the elders can be supported financially. That's not what I'm grabbing from it, but that's it. It says, let the elders that rule, you catch that, right? That rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in word and in doctrine. So elders who were fulfilling multiple roles to be financially supported. Elders rule in the congregation. I said we get to Hebrews 13 in a little bit. Let's look over there. Look at Hebrews 13, 17. Who has the rule? Elders. That's what 1 Timothy 5:17 says. What's Hebrews 13:17 say? Obey them that had the rule over you. Submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they must give an account, that they may do it with joy, not with grief, for that is unprofitable unto you. Shepherds have the rule, the governor, the governing, the lead, the shepherding of the congregation. So they might say, okay, we have met with the members of the congregation, and every member is available on Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, who knows, whatever, at these particular times. So brethren, starting this day, we're going to start meeting as a congregation at these times. And we are then expected to obey that rule. Submit ourselves to that rule. And they don't have to explain themselves. They see a need, that they're going to see to it that it's met. And they might also say, we only see a need to continue what's going on. I don't know, I'm not an elder. What they could not do is they couldn't say, we're not going to meet on the first day of the week. They don't have authority like anybody else, right? What did Paul say in Galatians 1, 8 and 9? You know, doesn't matter who a person is, it is the overall point. Says, but though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel than you, that which we have preached in you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel than that you have received, let him be accursed. Elders have no authority, neither does anyone else, to take away from what the Lord has instructed. Elders do have authority within the confines of expediency to go in addition to what the Lord has instructed. We know they have that authority because when we go back in Acts 2, how often did brethren meet? Daily. So there's authority to meet daily. There's also the church in Troas. Word that just came out. The church in Troas that only met. That sounded weird. The church in Troas only met once a week. So there's authority for what's expedient within there. That's where the elders rule. They rule in that area of expediency. And they would make those judgments. They'd be able to say, the Bible teaches us to exhort one another daily. Hebrews 3:13. We see it fit that we need to find a period of time where we come together every day, even if it's 15 minutes. And somebody like Judy might say, I'm going to drive an hour. But that's kind of what I would think, right? I'm going to drive an hour for 15 minutes? Talk to the elders about it. Judy might say, hey Brian, why are they having... I'd say, yeah, talk to the elders about it. That's their decision. That's their framework. And I would tell her, Judy, don't make this a problem. But it would be a challenge, right? But maybe there's some need that they know. Maybe there's somebody in the congregation that needs to be around brethren every single day. And they take some means. And I'm not saying that that would be right. Anything I suggest in this lesson, I'm just saying that's possible. I'm not saying anything more than that. All right, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not trying to bring up something that people need to think about. I actually think that's a pretty bad idea. But if our elder said it, so be it. I would think like Judy, why am I going to drive 30 minutes for a 15-minute session? I wouldn't do that with anything else. Might also say, any chance y'all could support me a little bit more for that gas? That would get expensive for 15 minutes of nothing. I said a point that I want to get to. But let me make sure I summarize all of this. That's where elders would be able to make decisions that we don't have any single other person that can come in and make that decision. I can't have a men's business meeting to do it. We can't go beyond that. However, within the Word of God, the Lord knows there's not going to be elders in every congregation. He knew and warned that things would wax worse and worse, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13. There are ways that we can accomplish things as a congregation without elders, and I'll tell you also, without an evangelist. There are ways that things can be accomplished. It's just like this. Without elders, everything we do is how much slower? We have to wait till Sunday. We have to all come together. We have to talk about it. And years ago, I remember bringing this point up where I said, it's not the role of just men in the congregation. It has to be every member of the congregation involved in these kinds of decisions. These aren't the men's decisions. These are the membership decisions. Well, where do you biblically get that? Look at Ephesians, the 5th chapter. Beginning in verse 19, just to keep this thought, get this thought going in the right direction, it says, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God the Father in our name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now notice verse 21. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Where there are no elders, we are left with the evangelist has authority in teaching, setting things in order, and preventing false doctrine. Pretty much, if you want to summarize the work of an evangelist, if it comes down to instruction or things related to instruction from the Word of God. Other than that, it's every member now has to be involved in the decisions because we don't have someone ruling over us. The only other place we can go in the Bible is here. So if we come together and we decide we're going to meet, in times past this happened, this congregation used to meet Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Used to meet Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And those things changed as the whole congregation made a decision. Well, once the whole congregation makes a decision, just to put this out there for your thought, let's say the whole congregation on a Sunday came together and every member made the decision, we're going to start meeting on Thursday night as a congregation. Ephesians 5 verse 21 says, submitting yourselves to one another in the fear of God. That is a collective decision. We all need to submit to it. That is the only way decisions like that can be made without an eldership. We still have no right to shepherd. We have no right to say we need to meet on these days. We have no right to go and be, for lack of better terms, private investigators in the lives of our brethren because we, as a congregation, do not have shepherds. But there are decisions to be made that must be made. We have to make them all collectively together. The evangelist doesn't have the authority in those arenas. There are times where I see things like Jeff learned he was working midnight. And I said, hey, do you mind if I bring before the congregation and ask if we can meet an hour earlier on Sunday so Jeff could get some sleep? Now, I know what I felt about it right away. But who had to make that decision? The entire congregation. And by the way, I always remove myself then. I just bring it up and then I go with what everyone else says because I don't want to overstep my role as an evangelist. And everyone agrees, okay, well, we're going to meet an hour earlier on the first day of the week. What's that require of the congregation? Look over at 1 Peter 5. It requires older and younger brethren, both physically and spiritually, to be able to mutually humble themselves to each other. Instead of one person rising up saying, well, you've not been as Christian as long as I have, or you don't know as much about the Bible as I do, or anything else. 1 Peter 5, 5 and 6 says, and this is right after Peter's words about elders that we've already read, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. That humility has to be among all the members, young and old, mature and immature. What do we want to avoid? Without elders and including the evangelist, we want to avoid the congregation ever having somebody like Diotrephes. You remember Diotrephes? Look at 3 John. And sometimes this happens even when there's elders. Sometimes there's one elder who becomes a quote-unquote alpha elder, where he's more vocal, where he's more out in front. If we're appointing qualified men, I would hope we've taught them well enough that they'll not be an alpha elder or a main voice. In 3 John 9 through 11, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, forbid them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. We don't want Diotrephes. We want brethren, like the many contexts we've studied in the Bible in times past, like Philippians 2, 1-11, who have the mindset of serving one another. So, for example, and I keep coming back to this particular example. Let's say there are brethren that want to assemble more frequently as a congregation. But then there are such drastic work schedules. And by the way, that's what we have here. We have people with drastically different work schedules. It's challenging enough to be able to assemble upon the first day of the week. And some people have had to make changes in their jobs to be able to do that. So let come back to the point. We have people that want to assemble. You also have to have the mindset towards, yes, that'd be great. Would we grow spiritually more? Oh, by all means. Absolutely, most assuredly. Can you imagine if we could study Luke chapter 1 4 days a week? That'd be great. We would make all kinds of progress through the Bible, studying deeply into things. And it'd always be on our mind. You could make so many arguments. Where would sin creep into our brethren's lives if they were together all the time? Well, what are you going to have Brandon do? Not work at all? What about Jeff? What about Trey? Trey can tell you he's off on Sunday and he requests Tuesday night off. But pretty much every week he works some different hours. And sometimes hours, it's like, what? Makes absolutely no sense. So you can't even predict his schedule. And by the way, sometimes he doesn't get his schedule till Sunday night. And there's even been rare occasions where it's Monday before he knows what he's working the rest of the week. How's the congregation going to do with that? How are you going to do it? Get another job. We live in a city that, even when closed down, still has various different hours, 24-hour operations in a lot of jobs, or early and late operations. It's hard to find those times. So we as brethren, now with elders, that might, I don't know how anything could change with elders, but they might go about it differently. But as brethren, we can't just look and say, you know what, man? You quit your job. All of y'all need to find an 8-to-5. Where? But you need to find an 8-to-5 so that we can have Bible study on this night, and this night. What are you going to do when your brethren look back and say, but how am I going to provide for my family? I'm going to give up my insurance. I'm going to give up the seniority of my job. I'm going to give up 3/4 of my income. How am I going to do that? And by the way, I'm sure of this, every member of this congregation would do it if they had to. How would we be submitting to one another and loving one another and serving one another if we made them have to? If we obligated them to do so? And I would say the same thing if we had elders that did that. I would question, how can you obligate that? It'd be great if the congregation was entirely retired. Yeah, then we could meet every morning, right? Every afternoon, whatever. What really matter? Meet all kinds of times. But that's not the case. People have different schedules. So when we're thinking about serving one another, humility one with another, staying within scriptural confines, always doing everything in the name of the Lord, Colossians 3:17, there's always a lot to consider. It's why the Lord said men that have those decisions have to meet these strict criteria of qualifications. They've proven themselves to be shepherds in every way of life. We have it. When we look at our congregation and going forward, or any other time, when we have to make collective decisions, we're going to be hindered by things. We can't stop that. One time I had a discussion with someone, again, not member of the congregation, and they wanted to change the times of meeting, and weren't taking into consideration someone's job, and they wanted to do it kind of forcefully. Well, then they made the argument that we ought to meet as a congregation at this time, and they took the class that I teach on Tuesday, which is just my class. You know, we know that's not a work of the congregation, just my work as an evangelist. And they said, we need to move that to 5 o'clock. It fits my schedule better. And I said, we don't need to do anything. I've determined when I'm going to hold that class. And I determine that based on who is normally there. and has been for years. I've taught a weekly class almost the whole time I've preached here. It used to be Friday nights at my house. It started off very small. So I take into account the people that have always come to that class. But that's just my class. That's when I'm holding a class. Well, we need to meet at this time, and we need to do it more days out of the week. And then they named two particular members that they knew who could be here on Tuesday nights and chose not to be. And I'm like, I don't know that. I don't ask people where they're at, what they're doing. I don't particularly care to do that. And that, again, had to get into the whole, I'm not an elder. I'm not a shepherd. I'm not going to go down this road. But as this discussion increased, I had to make a point to them. We as a congregation will only meet as frequently as our weakest members will allow anyway. What do you mean by that? How can you surrender the congregation to the weakest members? In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it's not me submitting the congregation to the weakest members. If we have elders, I guarantee you they would think this way too, because the Bible teaches us to think this way. In 1 Corinthians 12, I'm just going to start verse 14. The context is spiritual gifts. But the application, you'll be able to see. It says, for the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? The ear shall say, because I am not of the eye, am I not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? So here's the problem in Corinth. You had some people, and you see it even with the way they turned the Lord's Supper into a common meal in the previous chapter. You had some people that were basically outcasts in the congregation. They didn't feel like they fit in. There were schisms. There were divisions in the congregation. So he says in verse 17, if the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now God set the members, every one of the bodies that pleased Him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? But now there are many members, yet but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee, nor the, again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, now notice this, much more those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. And those members of the body which think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need, but God has tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there should be no schism in the body, that the members should have the same care one for another. So there's the biblical way of going about that. Yes. If we have people that are not interested in certain things, they are going to influence the congregation more strongly. Why? Because we're not going to chase off the weakest. We're not going to chase off the weakest. We're not going to try to get it down to where we figure out who the elite members are of the congregation. Where's that thinking come from anyway? Only from people who think they're elitist. Where do you think they'll be? Very warm, eternal place. For sure. So when we look at this whole entire lesson, there's no substitutes for elders. I am not, and I will never step into. I guard that very, very strongly. Have done that for many years. Tried to protect myself from being put in a position to where I overstep my bounds. If I'm going to err, I'm going to go the other way, rather than into shoes that I cannot. And I'm not saying the error is right. That would be sinful too. But I'm telling you, I'm not going to act like an elder when I'm not qualified to be one. Does that mean I'll see things that I'm not going to deal with? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it is not my right to deal with it the way it would need to be dealt with. Well, how will you deal with it? I was asked that question. I will teach. And I will teach. And I will teach. And then I will leave it up to everyone to put that into practice. The moment it becomes a congregational issue, let me give you a very clear case of this, in case you may have forgotten, which I doubt you did. I knew there was problems with members of our congregation for 2 years. And I dealt with it and dealt with it and dealt with it in a way that I could privately. And some others were involved. Harold was involved. Brandon involved. Scott sometimes involved. I'm not sure about others, but yeah, others were involved too. But it never became a congregational issue until a Tuesday night class. And a comment was made, and I can't directly quote it, been too long. But the point was, I could learn as much being online as I can being here in person. And the implication being made after that, that a certain couple who ended up moving here with their children shouldn't move here, that there were better places for them to go. When that was said, that problem that was private was surely now public, and I didn't let it go. It became an erring statement that needed to be dealt with. I chose to deal with it, tried to deal with it in a way that didn't cause a public outburst, but it ended up doing much more than that. Those cases, an evangelist is going to step in. He's not going to let something be said publicly that's wrong and not deal with it in some way. That's not something that I'll ever let happen. Let me say this. You too ought not let that happen. We are all watchmen, remember? We all watch. If there's someone that creeps in unaware and that becomes a public thing, it needs to be addressed with or without an evangelist, with or without an eldership. It needs to be addressed. Can't let those things stand. I'm going to conclude if you'll turn to Amos 6. Amos 6 and verse 1 says, "Woe to them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations to whom the house of Israel came." I want to use this point like this. Woe to you if you're at ease here at Sunrise Acres who trust in Brian. I am only an evangelist. I will only do what I'm authorized to do. And I won't go beyond that. And that doesn't mean I can't see or hear, but I won't go beyond my role. I won't step outside of those boundaries. I won't let somebody go to hell, but I'm not going to deal with it the way elders are qualified to deal with it. And sometimes that means I may see or hear something, and I actually have to study how I'm allowed to deal with it before I even deal with it. Need to think about it. Need to make sure I'm not stepping into that role. As you all know who know me, and I think everyone in here would know this, you know that very easily I could step into and do much more than I'm allowed to do because I'm that type of person. I would do everything so no one else would have to. My wife will tell you. She'll say, "Don't make me beat you to this." If there's something that needs done around the house, I'm going to do it. Even if it's not within my role, I see it needs to be done, I'm going to do it. So I'm telling you, I'm consciously aware and constantly guarded not to step outside my realm as an evangelist because I know that's my personality, that if I'm capable of doing something, I'll volunteer. I'm the person that if there was a crowd of a million people and someone said, "Somebody come up here and fix this," and if I knew how to fix it, I'd go up there and fix it. I wouldn't look around and say, "Who else will do it?" You as watchmen need not be at ease. You need not think of me as an elder, even though you might not use that phrase, and don't expect me to act in that way. And if I ever did, you need to call me on it. You need to say, "That's not your job." You need to step back. Or at least question, "Why are you doing this?" Or, "Why are you saying that?" There are things that I will do as a member of the congregation. Clean up the building. Put together a songbook. Because I have a computer and a printer and I'm kind of an organizational freak and stuff like that. But as far as an evangelist goes, you need to watch. You need to make sure you don't put me in a position I'm not allowed to be in and that I don't put myself. And I'm not going to stand up here and say, "Trust me, I'll never do it." I certainly will try. But we all know that men have failed at far less feats. So you need to watch. You need to make sure. Don't be at ease. Israel erred because they trust in the mountain of Samaria. They thought mountains can't be moved. Don't think evangelists can't be moved. Don't put your faith and confidence in men. So you got to watch. an evangelist is not an elder, doesn't have the right to act as one in any way at any point in time. And you'll hear me teach that as long as I'm alive, because that's the scriptures we've read today. If I say anything goofy, let me know so I don't put this online. Like if I misnamed a rap group or something like that. Like Katrina said. Anyway. Hopefully this went well. Everybody here has heard an invitation so many times that it would be a waste of time to give it. So I will just say, number 38, if you're capable and willing.